Okay, so here we are in two of session seven, I believe. I hope I have that right. Let me say a couple of things. First of all, there are a couple of new people who've joined us. These are people who were on the retreat that I led in England. And I think I warned them, you know, that we were starting the second year of a two-year program, so it was kind of jumping in the middle. But I think it's certainly worth trying. Let me say that the reading that we're doing now, we're doing a reading. You know, we're actually spending the next couple of months on reading the time section of Knowledge of Time and Space. And as I've mentioned from time to time in this program, Knowledge of Time and Space is a really challenging book. More so in some ways, well, different people react differently, but in some ways it's very playful, which can be very inviting. But it also has so many things to say that it's in a way hard to feel like you've gotten into it all. But of course with with the TSK books, it's not as though you read them and say, oh, got it. You know, the reading the books is itself an exercise. And just as you, when you do an exercise, you don't say, okay, well, I did that one. What's next? You know, you return again and again and again. And the same thing is true of the readings. So if you do find it a little challenging to read Knowledge of Time and Space, well, you know, go back and read it again. And you'll find something there that speaks to you. The other thing I wanted to mention before we jump in is that I did get some feedback over the summer that people felt that these 45-minute sessions felt a little rushed. And it's true. There's always a lot to cover. This week is no exception. I'm quite confident we won't get through, or we won't really talk about certain parts of the reading. So I've decided, unless I hear some strong objections, that we will do what we've already been doing more or less, which is extend the program at least a few minutes more. We'll figure that our ordinary session runs 50 minutes instead of 45. I'm not sure that 5 minutes will make a huge difference, but maybe it'll give us all a chance to take a deep breath from time to time. So those are the practical things. What I want to do today is follow along with the pattern that we've been using in the last few classes, and that is to start with the practice, to start with the assigned practice for the previous week, which in this case was based on a page, really, of Sacred Dynamics, page 215. And we'll get to that practice. But today, I think I really do need to set up the practice. I need to spend about 10 or 15 minutes, probably, laying out what it is that, you know, what does the practice mean exactly? Because it's not presented as an exercise, although it kind of is. But what does it mean, and how might one go about it? And most important, really, what is the significance of working in this way? So I want to take these first few minutes to lay out what the practice is about. So last week, the practice for last week had to do with memory and really trying to see, what is it that marks out a memory as a memory? And this week, the practice will stay focused on the past. It's not as though we have to stay with the past, but there is something kind of intuitively right, it seems to me, about working with the past. And I'll say more about that in a couple of minutes. But I want to start off by giving you an example. It's just... one that I made up, but it's the kind of thing we do think about all the time. So suppose that you leave the house and suddenly a thought pops into your mind. You say, well, did I do X? You know, did I feed the cat? There's a little echo coming from somewhere. Did I feed the cat? Or did I turn off the stove? Or, you know, the kinds of things that people suddenly wonder about. They're not sure if it really happened. I think that echo is coming from Joanna, from what I can see. It's okay. I think Kathleen can mute you. Yeah, she just did. Reminds me. Okay. So we have this thought. We say, well, did I do something? And so the question that I want to ask is, how do we know? How do we decide whether you say, oh, yes, I did feed the cat, or I did turn off the stove, or I didn't, or I don't know. But let's say we discover, yes, I really did do that. How do we know that? What is it? You know, what do we rely on to say, well, that is exactly what went on here. I did that. So I'm sure there are many ways of describing that, but as I thought about it, I thought it seemed to me that the way that works is that there's something like a marker for today. You know, like we have a memory of feeding the cat. Let's use that as an example, because I like that example. Even if you don't have a cat, just imagine now, or a dog. I like that because that's something you do every single day, or at least once a day, right? So you're trying to figure out, well, did I do it today? And the todayness of that memory, when we say, yes, I did do it today, there's kind of a marker. You know, we have we tag the event with the fact that it happened today. Or maybe it wasn't today. Maybe we just say, oh, I just did it recently, or something like that. And, you know, in other cases, we tag an event with a marker that says that was a long time ago. It's a little too simple to talk about markers. So, for instance, I used the example before we started of reading a book when I was 14 years old. And when I thought about that, I had a little, I don't know, sort of a sense of 14-year-old Jack. You know, that was kind of the marker that was associated with reading the book, or maybe with other memories. That just gets too complicated for what I want to talk about now. I'm really interested in this more simple example of there's a today marker that tells me that I really did feed the cat. What that suggests to me, if you kind of go along with that, is that time in that sense is more like a marker than an actual dynamic. Right? So we say that happened yesterday, and we have a sense of the yesterdayness of it. So we've marked out that particular event, or one of the characteristics of that event is that it's got the property of having happened yesterday, or having happened today, or having, like that. And we're not too skilled at that. I mean, it gets very fuzzy about whether it happened last week or the week before. We have to think it through carefully and all of that. But the basic idea that time, in the sense of the past in particular, is a kind of a marker, in exactly the same way that if you're looking at a clock and the clock says 3 o'clock, that's just a marker. You know, there's nothing really time-like about the fact that the clock says 3 o'clock. It's just marking a particular moment in time. And a lot of our ways of thinking about time are based on that kind of physical marker, where time really is a property of a thing, rather than or an event, rather than you know, something that's alive in its own right, you could say. So that's one aspect. But it's also true, of course, that there is a dynamic to time. And I've talked about this before, you know, as I'll say in a minute, it seems to me very mysterious Well, I just said it now, didn't I? But I'll say it again. It seems to me very mysterious that time unfolds. So, you know, Christmas is coming in a few months, and we're very confident that it will get here, you know, or you know, the evening, well, whatever time it is for you right now, but whatever, you know, some event that's happening a few hours from now will happen for, will get here. There's a movement to time. And of course, that's obvious. And that's really, in a sense, when we talk about that, we're talking about something that's you know, gets closer to the heart of time. Time is a marker, not so much, even though we use that, but time is this unfolding dimension. That is the mystery. You know, how does that happen? And I don't mean, you know, we don't want an explanation. We really are never looking so much for explanations in TSK, in the vision. But you know, how can we connect to this dynamic unfolding of time? That's what I mean by a mystery. And actually, I've talked about mystery in that context a lot, but I noticed that there's a reference to that on page 21 of the reading from Knowledge of Time and Space, about 10 lines down. It just casually, he just throws that in. He says, there's a steady shifting from state to state, a mystery to conventional knowledge. So time moves, and we don't understand really how that happens. We're, of course, subject to it. We anticipate it. We rely on it. But it's not in any way easy to connect to it. Now, we've worked in the past with really looking, you know, aiming to go right to that dynamic of time. The exercise that we did with that's based on page 99, I think it is, of Dynamics of Time and Space, is exactly looking at that dynamic of time. I noticed somebody, my chat box is behaving a little strangely today, but it does work. So I see that Michael posted something. Let's take a look. He says, on the other hand, I find it is increasingly frequent that I can't be sure whether my memory is from today or just an image of a repetitive action. Right. I find that too. Probably more frequently. But in a sense, you know, I think that kind of helps to make the point, because we do sometimes know, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we lose track, or we can't be sure. I'll give you another example is if you're counting, you know, something that you have to do three times, let's say, or let's say seven times. Let's say you're meditating and you say, I'm going to watch my breath for 10 cycles of breath, and then you lose track. Right? So you don't know. Okay. So Michael goes on to say, I'm not the only one, considering that there are pill dispensers whose purpose is to tell you whether you've had your pills yet today. In other words, it's easy to do something in such an automatic way that we weren't really present. Yes, that's, you know, a very good way of talking about it. And that is really what I'm pointing towards. If when time is just a marker, then maybe it gets marked and maybe it doesn't. And if it's a very habitual action and your mind is somewhere else when you're doing it, then the marker doesn't get marked. You know, it's like if you're on a trail through the forest, and let's imagine that you're leaving little marks for yourself, you're building a little stone pile or something to show that you've come this way. Well, if you forget to mark it, then you risk getting lost, and it's something like that. Okay, so we have this way of time being just kind of a marker, and then we have this mysterious dimension of time. So we know that time moves, and we know the consequences. We know that we're getting older. We know that, you know, Christmas will arrive and that the meeting that we planned will happen. But it all just, it's kind of a mystery. It's all too much for us. I mean, you know, we are subject to it. We rely on it. I'm kind of repeating myself here, but we don't really understand it. So suppose we did understand it, or suppose we really could connect to it. That was the exercise I mentioned from Dynamics. Well, it seems to me that when that happens, time comes alive and we come alive. So there are many, many instances, many examples where that happens. If time, you know, sometimes you're struck by something really beautiful. Sometimes there's a feeling of love or some other very strong connection to the situation. Kumye, for those of you who know that practice, or perhaps yoga or meditation, there are times when you really feel connected to the aliveness of time, where you're really inhabiting the present. Those are clues, you could say, that there is a dynamic and that we're not usually connected to it, because the moments when we do connect to it are special, and we crave them. So sometimes when you have that kind of experience, you say, in English anyway, you say, time stands still. You know, it was as though time stood still, we say. And really, in a sense, it seems to me that what that means is that we've stepped outside this kind of mechanical structure of time and entered into the dynamic, which is a completely different thing. So you could say time stands still, but you might also say, you know, time begins in a moment like that, or time comes alive in a moment like that. So those are the two alternatives. We're not usually engaging the dynamic of time. But sometimes we do, and we have a sense of that. So there's this linear structure, and that's based on marking time out, and it's based on the three times, past, present, and future, and it's essentially static. And then there's this other possibility of time as being dynamic, which is something that we can contact. And we've talked about this many different times in the course of this program. And that sense is one that we don't usually connect with. So there's some way in which those two interact. There's the dynamic of time, and then there's the mechanism, the linear structure of time. And if the very beginning of the reading for today, I think, helps explain or helps us understand, or at least suggest, how those two are connected. It's very clear. It's the first sentence. It says, when time's momentum, so the momentum for right now, I think we can say that's the dynamic. When time's momentum is measured out as the lifeless ticking away of linear temporality, and that's what we've been talking about, the intrinsic aliveness of time is channeled into mechanisms for multiplication and duplication. Time, that's mostly what I want to focus on, but the next sentence makes this very interesting point. Time sets up boundaries, identities, partitions, and limits. And then at the end of the paragraph, filtered through such representations of knowledge, the creative energy of time disappears from view and becomes inaccessible. So that's what we've been talking about. But the key point that I want to make here is that the connection between the two is that the time that is channeled into linear time is still time. The aliveness of time gets transformed into static structures. And it's a little bit like the distinction or, I mean, this is just a comparison. I'm not saying that it's the same thing. But, you know, everybody nowadays grows up learning about the equation of matter and energy, right? Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, E equals mc squared. So energy and mass, they can be converted into one another. And this is kind of similar. The aliveness of time can be converted into, and is ordinarily converted in our ordinary experience, can be converted into mechanisms for multiplication and duplication, as the text says. And of course, what that suggests is that if we really go into those mechanisms that are in operation, the mechanisms for multiplication and duplication, we can convert back into the dynamic of time. And that is a part, really, of what we're wanting to do, of the kind of basic approach. So it's not that the mechanisms themselves are bad. They're useful. You know, knowing how to tell time is really useful. It's like, you know, knowing how to do anything. We find ourselves in the world, and the world has these characteristics, and we develop ways to work with it. We develop tools. We develop different approaches. And working with time as a mechanism for multiplication and duplication is very useful. It's a useful tool. But if it comes at the cost of losing the dynamic liveness of time, well, that's a very great price to pay. So, okay, that takes us much closer to the practice. But I still need to say, or think I need to say, a couple of more things. One is these mechanisms for multiplication and duplication. That's very closely related. I don't know if it's identical, but it's very closely related to what Sacred Dimensions calls the ratio. So the ratio is a term we haven't talked about in this course. It got mentioned in When It Rains, in the introduction last week. There's a very brief mention of, you know, what does this word ratio mean? It's a term that's specific to Sacred Dimensions. And in When It Rains, it just says the ratio is the specification of the logos. Well, what is the logos? We'll maybe talk about that. I mean, that is something we've discussed in the past. I'll come back to that maybe in a moment. But the mechanisms for multiplication and duplication are pretty closely related to the ratio. The ratio is a way of structuring. We have an arithmetic ratio that you all learned about in school and may still remember. This is not limited to that, although that's an example of a ratio, I think. But when you divide time into past, present, and future, that's a kind of ratio, or you could say it's a mechanism. So one way you might think about that is the ratio of the past to the present and the future. Well, that gives some sense of it. Now, the reason I bring up the term ratio is because it's important to the exercise. If we look at Sacred Dimensions, at the bottom of page 214, which is the assignment, the exercise was 214 to 15, so starting at the bottom of 214, and it says, imagine that the ratio opens, that new knowledge comes to the fore. So the ratio, in this sense, is something that's closed. It's these mechanisms for multiplication and duplication. And now the suggestion is made, well, maybe we could open the ratio. Right? And then new knowledge would come to the fore. So what does it mean to open the ratio? Well, there's an answer to that, more or less, on 215. And there's some discussion here that we don't need to concern ourselves with too much. But about 10 lines from the bottom, it's talking about how it's not a question of opening more space. It says, though the universe is expanding, it is infinity that holds the power of the ratio. Okay, well, any exercise or any discussion that asks you to get serious about infinity is kind of challenging. But I think in our case, or given what we've been talking about, that is workable. We can make sense of that. When we talk about infinity here, we're really talking about something that escapes the boundaries of the mechanisms for multiplication and duplication. And the aliveness of time does that. You know, the aliveness of time is, you know, it goes beyond, or it's outside the range of what is possible once these mechanisms are in place. And yet at the same time, as I was saying before, the aliveness of time is the aliveness of time is available, and the mechanisms are just an expression of the aliveness. And that's very much related to what I just read, where he says it is infinity that holds the power of the ratio. I think it's basically saying the same thing. Very different language, and I don't want to say it's exactly the same thing, but for our purposes, it's very close. So Caroline asks, is infinity the temporal equivalent of boundless space? Well, yeah. I think it's okay to say that. I don't see any immediate objection. You remember that there are points that we've in the readings where Rinpoche talks about finitude, like the I don't quite remember now exactly how he says it, but the things show up in a particular way, and there's a kind of they're always pointing back toward their source, you could say, which is infinity in this context. And in the same way, when at least when objects show up, you could say they're pointing back to their source, which is space. And in that sense, I'd say, yes, that seems right. Okay. So the infinity then that's being pointed to is that's just the dynamic. That's the temporal dynamic. And it's a great mystery, as we said before. And infinity is, of course, a mystery as long as you're caught up in finitude, as long as you're caught up in this and that. And then Klaus asks, is infinity the same as the future infinitive? Well, that's exactly where this discussion of finitude comes in. And I'd have to go back and look. I think that there's a clear link and connection, but I'm not ready to say anything about that now. So I encourage you to go back and look. Okay. So just a little review, and then we're about ready to do the practice. So we start off with the notion that time, as we ordinarily engage it very often, it's just kind of a marker. It's just kind of a property, and none of the aliveness is available there. And yet, when you see that those markers do point toward a progression, there is movement in time, then that takes us closer to the rhythms of time. And rhythm is a really interesting word in TSK, and it's not one that I've never felt satisfied with my own ability to connect with what's being talked about. But every time it comes up, it's fruitful. And in this reading on 215, Rinpoche says, four lines down, he says, the ratio is not bound to one place. When it opens, we discover the points of space, the rhythms of time, and the distinctions of from without regard to the here and there, specified by first level knowledge. And then he says something that is a really great sacred dimensions way of talking about things that we aren't going to try to go into. He says, we enter the meaningful geometry that discloses space, time, and knowledge directly. This notion of the geometry of time and space, that's what sacred dimensions is all about, and it's an exploration in its own right. We are not going to deal with it. So just to be clear, don't want to build up too many expectations. Okay, so now let's take a look at the practice. What I'm interested in here is page two, the first full paragraph on page 215. And this is the invitation to really do this as an exercise. It says, at this point, now that we've talked about the meaningful geometry and opening the ratio and discovering the rhythms of time. So he says, at this point, now that all that is kind of available to us, it's not like, oh, now I get that, but we've been primed to think in a certain way. So he says, at this point, the transitions of experience. So that's, again, you know, now it's a certain time in the day, and later it's going to be a later time in the day. Those are the transitions, or now I'm talking, and in a moment we're going to practice. Those transitions. At this point, the transitions of experience can be differently observed. And then this suggestion that we can observe differently, which is the exercise that we want to do, is immediately linked to the past. He says, rather than remembering or forgetting the past, or let me say that differently, rather than remembering the past or forgetting the past, those are our two options usually, we can inhabit it. Inhabiting it, we can let go of it. Letting go of it, we are able to specify the future, not at a distance, but from within. The tenseness of our present way of being can give way. So let me point toward the way Rinpoche plays with the word tenseness here. And this chapter, the first chapter that we've been looking at a little bit, does the same thing. It says intensification of time. So tense in English, and I checked it out in German at least, and it's not at all the same. But in English, the word tense, there are two different origins for the word tense, but they allow for a play on words. So tense is like being, you know, the opposite of relaxed. But tense is also past tense, present tense, future tense, right? It's a grammar thing. So when time is intensified, or here when he talks about the tenseness of our present way of being, he's really pointing to the fact that we get stuck in this way of understanding time in according with the mechanisms of multiplication and duplication, and those mechanisms really are the division of time into past, present, and future. That's one way of engaging time. But what you lose then, when you get caught up in that tenseness, is you could say the aliveness of time, the wholeness of time, the infinity of, I guess we could say, of time. That's where we want to go. And we do that by inhabiting the past. That's the practice. Inhabiting the past so that we can let go of it. So what does that mean? Well, that's what you have been looking at for the last week, I hope, and that's what we're going to do for a few minutes now. Let me just make a couple of suggestions. It's, you know, how one does that is it's kind of up to you. Take a look. What you need to do now is just pick out some, or what I would suggest you do, is pick out some event in the past, could be recent, could be a long time ago, and just ask yourself, how could I inhabit that past? Not so much you have to ask, not inhabit the memory. Well, you need to look, you need to see. What would it be? How could I inhabit the past? So we associate that past with a particular event, and now we want to try to inhabit it. Let me just mention again another play on words in English. The word habit, to inhabit, is, you could say, it's actually playing with the meaning of the word that we don't think about so often. It's not just a habit like Gewohnheit in German. You know, we have our habits. But habit can also mean clothing. And when we say inhabit, it's like we clothe ourselves. How can we clothe ourselves in time? Maybe time inhabits us. That's another possibility. As you start to ask the question, the opportunity arises to investigate it. And how you investigate it is up to you. You know, there's going to be some speculation, some thought. Don't leave it at the level of thought or speculation. See wherever that leads you. Can it take you toward a sense of inhabiting the past? That's the practice. So there are no really very specific instructions. But the reason I've taken quite a bit of time now to lay this out is because I think we need to frame it in the right way. And then we have a sense of what it might mean to inhabit the past. So that's what I'd like us to try to look at now. Let's try to inhabit, see what it's like to inhabit the past. And it may be a good clue that he says inhabiting the past means letting go of the past. Okay, let's do that for about 5 minutes, and then we'll have 10 minutes or so for discussion. Okay? Okay. So I invite your comments, and we already have one. Okay, so David is first out of the gate. So David writes, I wrote last week, sorry, I'm just technical issue. I wrote last week about remembering, so he means last in the last session, last Sunday. I wrote last week about remembering sitting on the beach on a sunny day. I found that focusing on the spaces in the memory opened them. Further opening the memory. In fact, it opened boundaries that I saw I had constructed. So inhabiting was dropping many of the limits that I assumed the memory was composed of. Now, I think without going into, you know, without really talking about this specific memory, it's a little hard for me anyway to say, well, what were the limits that composed the memory? But I think if people hear that in a kind of playful way, there's a sense in which I'm sure people can follow with that. So, okay. I found that focusing on the spaces in the memory opened them, further opening the memory. In fact, it opened boundaries that I saw I had constructed. So inhabiting was dropping many of the limits that I assumed the memory was composed of. When that happened, the memory seemed to come alive, was immediate. There was not a subject. There was not a subject-object relationship between me and memory. I was the memory inhabiting happened. Okay, well, that's a very nice description. I think there is something really important there. That I'd like to comment on, and that is that when it talks about letting go of the past, inhabiting the past, which is letting go of the past, I think that has to do exactly with this notion that the past is this thing. You know, it's been marked out as existing in the past. So we're back to that marker quality. And letting go of the past means you let go of that identity of the past, which puts it at a distance, which automatically puts it at a distance. And then the possibility for inhabiting the past can happen. And, you know, you might wonder, why are we focusing on the past? Because usually we would say, you know, what's important, what's valuable is to be able to inhabit the present moment, if you were using that language at all. But I think one of the reasons, at least my sense of why it's good to look at the past, is that exactly we tend to turn the past into a thing. We tend to turn it into something that's removed from us. And by inhabiting the past, we have an opportunity to really challenge those limits. And I think that's very closely related to what David was saying. So I'm just playing with that a little bit. Eliana says, for me, I can only bring or inhabit memories that I had fully paid attention to before. It is like awareness tied the memory, and then I gently pull it back. That's nice. So it's like, I like that image. It's like you're kind of, you have all these memories floating in the sea. That's how I think about it. And they're on ropes, and now you can pull on the ones that you've managed to tie with your awareness, right? Otherwise, the memory is lost. When I inhabit the present automatically, there is no tracing back, right? So the word tracing is interesting there. You know, whether that's the right, what kind of an approach is that? I don't want to say right or wrong, but when you try to trace a memory, that's going to lead you to one kind of experience. If you try to inhabit it in some other way, that's going to lead to another kind of experience. But this issue of, you know, which memories remain and which memories are lost is a very interesting one. And I actually intend to give you an assignment to do during the next week. It's kind of the walkabout practice for next week, but it's not really a walkabout this time, that will be a way of exploring exactly that question. When are memories lost? And if we try to bring them back when we think they're lost, what does that do? Or can we even do it? Okay. Klaus writes, inhabiting the space of the past, I can let go of the past, since the space of the past is the space of the present and the space of the future. Right, so that is what Rinpoche suggests here. There's a kind of, in a very literal way, when he says the tenseness of time. Doesn't he say that here? He says, letting go of the past, we are able to specify the future from within. The tenseness of our present way of being can give way. And that's the play on words that I was pointing to before. We are tense, and maybe it's because we're kind of holding everything in place. You know, the past has to be the past, the future has to be the future, our identities, you know, everything has to be lined up, and that takes a lot of effort, so we're tense. But it's also true that the way that tenseness manifests, that tension manifests, is in the structure of past, present, future tense. Right? And if we let go of that tenseness, then past and present and future come together in a kind of a, you know, what we could call a timeless inhabiting. It's timeless in terms of the three moments of time, which doesn't mean that we lose the ability to distinguish them, but that's not the heart of what's going on. Instead of holding on to that threefold structure of time, we find ourselves in a tenseless, timeless structure, but that timeless structure is the one where we really engage the dynamic of time, which is what's referred to here in this exercise or in Sacred Dimensions as the infinity that powers time, roughly. Okay? So Michael says, let's see. I told myself that I wanted to live a fulfilling, meaningful life. Okay, so that was kind of your preamble. Then, since that immediately slipped into the past, oh, I see. Okay, so you mean that intention immediately slipped in the past into the past? If I'm wrong, tell me. Was that cough meant to tell me that was wrong? Okay. Then since that immediately slipped into the past, that intention of wanting to live a fulfilling, meaningful life, I attempted to inhabit that past aspiration and look from there to myself sitting in the same place, but now in an ongoing stream of time. So there was going right back to the moment before when the intention formed, right? And then you look from that past moment back into this present moment where you're actually inhabiting the past moment. This gets very complicated if you look at it from outside, but from inside, maybe, you know, makes very good sense. It occurred to me that to really look forward to a present moment from an earlier moment of aspiration requires that I bring them together in a relationship, a marriage of moments. Yeah, that's similar to what we've been talking about, right? Now, right? How do you give birth to infinity? Well, maybe first there has to be a marriage of moments. Right? Okay. Caroline says, this connects with saying that clairvoyance isn't a matter of seeing the future, but rather fully inhabiting time in the present. Yes, I think it does. I don't have much to say about clairvoyance, but what you say makes very good sense. Karin says, does inhabiting mean getting aware of all the layers of time and space which come together in a situation? There are no single points of time, maybe timeless. And I think, you know, in our discussion now, we've been, I think we've touched on that, and I'm not sure that I have more to say. It's interesting that you bring in space. And it's always good to bring in space if you're working with time, and time when you're working with space. I'm not sure why you bring it in there. and I don't need to know. It's just interesting. Okay. But it does seem to take you to the notion of single points of time, maybe timeless, and that will give me a chance to say a couple of things just very briefly because, you know, we're out of time. One is that you know, there are two things that are discussed in these chapters that we have already discussed in the past, so I don't feel too bad about not leaving much time for them. One is the notion of the bystander. The bystander is exactly the one who is looking at time from a particular moment and therefore is cut off from time. Right? And the other thing is what is said in these chapters about experience. Experience is a word that we usually give a very positive valuation to, direct experience instead of concepts and abstraction and so on. But the point that's made in this reading is that experience is always referred back to the self at the center or the bystander. And so experience always stands outside of experience. And that's a complicated issue, but maybe I'll just weigh that. You could take a look. I see that Michael posted one more comment here. Rationality, these words seem to point to limitation, a limited faculty. Is that true of the word ratio? A limited view of infinity requiring a closer look? Yeah, I think that that's exactly right, that the ratio, I had some note about it here that I didn't get to, but it kind of goes in this direction. But just generally, yeah, it's very interesting that ratio is related to rations. I hadn't thought about that. And you know, so measuring out, right? And I think ratio is about measuring out, and rationality then too. And it is all about limitation. Let's go back for just a moment and then we'll stop. And I will turn to this, or I'll say something about this in the orientation for next week. In that first paragraph on page 19, we already looked at this, but it's talking about time's aliveness being channeled into mechanisms for multiplication and duplication. We've talked about that quite a bit. And then it says, played out into a world of positions. So the positions, of course, are taken by the self. This is a theme we've looked at before. Played out into a world of positions, time sets up boundaries, identities, partitions, and limits. And that all has to do with the ratio, right? And it all is a way of kind of narrowing down infinity, you could say, and making it manageable, limiting it so that the self can work with it, because the self won't function, can't be there if there isn't a sense of limit and limitation. That's really what the self is all about. With limits and limitation. So, yes, but it's important then to see that when you limit it in that way, when you conform to the structures, the mechanisms of duplication and multiplication and to the ratio, you still are doing all that through the power of time, through this infinity that we looked at. So one more time, I'll say this and then we'll stop. It is infinity that holds the power of the ratio. How does it all happen? How did the ratio get set up? It's through this infinity, which is never really lost. And that has a lot to do, I think, with what the TSK vision is about, that infinity is always available. Okay, we'll stop there. Naturally, I extended this by a few minutes and then immediately went over that too. I think that would probably be true even if we set aside 2 hours for this class. But there we are. okay, thank you, everybody.